No extra points for going fast. Okay. And if you're ahead of me, you lose points. Om Agam Tinyanjasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Jainam Tasmai Shri Gurudevayam Shri Chaitanya Manuviskam Sthapitam Jainam Bhutale Ayam Rupa Pada Malinam Nadhati Sharanam. You'll be happy to know that since you're such a smart group, I'm going to go ahead faster and you'll get your Saturdays back. You're all happy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, in text one we discussed control of the mind and senses. And text two describes the pitfalls one can encounter on the path of spiritual advancement. Atyahara prayashas cha prajalpo niyamagraha janasangascha loyam cha shadhir bhaktir vinashati. Vinashati means completely finished. These are the six items by which devotional service can be destroyed. Prabhupada begins by explaining the context in which we now find ourselves, our situation in the material world. Avidya karma sanganya tritiya shakti rishite. We're being under the control of the third energy of the Lord, the material energy, we're obliged to work. Our main problem is how to get free from the external energy and its miseries. So how can we work in such a way that we meet our material needs and still attain our spiritual goal? And you'll note Prabhupada's emphasis from the very beginning on simplicity, a simple natural way of life, simple living, and plain thinking. That's his theme throughout. So let's look at these items. Atyahar. Ahar means? Eating. Ahar means eating. And ati means a lot. Ati, you find this ati in a lot of Sanskrit combinations. In Bengali also. Ati bhakti choran lakhan. Too much devotion is the sign of a thief. Ati means, you know, in Indian English they say too much. And too much pleased to meet you means very much. So that's ati. So atyahara means too much, lots and lots of eating. Eating, or by extension it means collecting. Atyahara means eating more than needed or collecting more than needed. By Krishna's arrangement, every one of us gets as much as we need. It's Krishna's arrangement. Prabhupada points out, not here but elsewhere, the child is born and the breast is there in the milk of the mother. It's God's arrangement. The ant gets his grain of sugar, the elephant gets his ton. Everybody has some arrangement in nature. Prabhupada tells a story that there was some mela, like a Kumbh Mela, and some thousands of people were gathered, and one woman, old woman, was crying. So her son or some boy asked her, "Mother, why are you crying?" "No, how will I feed all these people?" The boy began to laugh. He said, "Mother, you just wait till evening. You know, how will I feed them? Where will they stay?" So by evening, you know, "Mother, where have all those people gone?" Everybody had some place to stay. Everybody had some food. You go to Kumbh Mela, there's, you know, hundreds and thousands of people. Everybody's got something, some place to stay, some food. So by God's arrangement, the earth provides our actual necessities. But human society has the propensity to collect more. Atyahara, the animals don't eat more. They eat what they need. And they don't collect more. The birds, Prabhupada said, that not that if you throw some grain on the ground, they, you know, pick up the bag and bring it home to their families. But the human being will do that. He'll take as much as he needs, plus all the rest. So this is atyahara. People miss the point of life, and they think that the point of life is to have more of everything. More food, more stuff. I have one devotee friend who's the secretary to the prime minister of one Middle Eastern country. And his job is to take care of the minister's cars. Cars, yes, cars. The limousines, the antique cars, the racing cars, this car, the guy's got, he's floating in money. So he's collected so many cars. And he requires one secretary just to, you know, take care of the cars and see that everything's okay with the cars. Now, is this man's life, you know, is he making progress toward the goal of life by having more cars? But this is his happiness, to have cars. Atyahara. Prabhupada points out that collecting shelves full of books is another form of atyahara. And for that matter, so is any endeavor to accumulate needless material knowledge, whether in philosophy or science or economic development or whatever. You know, collecting so many books and facts and information, and I've got to, you know, all of here. Just atyahara. What are you going to do with all this knowledge? Collect it. So, atyahara, collecting too much, finally leads to what? On a social level.
One has to work constantly to get all the things.
Yeah, that's on an individual level.
Yeah.
On a social level, what does it lead to?
There is discrepancy of resources.
What?
The people don't get, other people don't get enough.
Loud. I don't get enough volume.
If someone accumulates too much wealth, the other people, they cannot get enough.
Yeah, it leads to the imbalance. I've got more than I need, you've got less. What else does it lead to on a social level?
War between.
Yeah.
War between nations.
War. Atyahara leads to war. What do you have to do to collect too much? To get your share, that is to say, your 90% of the world's resources. What do you have to do?
Steal.
Yeah, you have to steal. You've got to go out there and grab, which means war. And what are the people that you steal from going to try and do? Yeah, fight back. Of course, they're all thieves. You know, just one's a bigger thief, one's a smaller thief, but they're all thieves. They're all thieves. They're all thieves, and the thieves fight with one another. Under different, you know, banners and different pretenses. They're busy fighting over, squabbling over the world's resources. The land, the minerals.
This is a famous statement of Mahatma Gandhi, or Mohandas Gandhi, like the earth provides enough for every man's need, but not for every man's greed.
They're thieves, and they must go to war among one another because of Atyahara. If they're satisfied, all right, this much I have, all right. Even the Pandavas, they're ready to avoid war. All right, we'll take a few villages. One village per brother. That means no need of fighting. We'll just take a village. But there had to be war because the other party, no, not enough land to put a pin in. It's ours. Well, Atyahara leads on a social level to war. Prabhupada said the communists and the capitalists, they'll be fighting with one another. The haves and the have-nots. This terrorism is the strategy of who?
Maya?
Definitely Maya. Yeah, the have-nots. Those who are powerless. You know, what do? When you don't have a big army, when you don't have, you know, all the resources, you know, you throw a rock at the guy and run. Really, what do? If you're a big country, you make some pretense and you invade. And if you're a small guy, you don't have the resources, you throw hand grenades or rocks or whatever you can get your hands on and run. Atyahara. Who believes that the war on terrorism is really about terrorism? Who doesn't believe it? Who's not sure? Who believes it? Okay, there are a couple of believers, some undecideds, and a batch of guys who don't believe it at all. I don't believe it. And just from a practical point of view, you know, we're not on war with Pakistan, at war with Pakistan. Are they a terrorist nation? And you're not up on Indian politics. They're always crossing the border and, you know, doing terrorist activities in Kashmir. But we don't say, okay, war against you, you're terrorists. It's about Atyahara, in my humble opinion. Atyahara prayashas chapajalta. Anyway, it doesn't really matter whether it's terrorism or simply opportunism or whatever it is. At the bottom of it, you'll find Atyahara. Whether it's really terrorism, and the terrorism has come about because we've grabbed too much, and therefore terrorists are fighting back because they have to throw rocks. Or whether it's about using a pretext for going in and grabbing something else. Whichever way you analyze it, you'll find Atyahara, in my humble opinion. But in any case, Atyahara is not good. And on an individual level, what does it do?
It makes it attached, greedy, and on the other side, the others get envy.
Yeah. And you lose your devotional focus. You become big and fat. Your mind goes dull. You're always thinking about eating more. Or getting more, collecting more. We read this in Nectar of Devotion also, right? One should not collect disciples, one should not build too many temples, it's not collecting. Collecting is not good for devotional service. Now we can make thousands and millions of disciples for Krishna's service, but if it's collecting, it'll cause problems. Collecting money, hoarding money, collecting books, more and more and more, collecting titles. Yeah, you collect it and then you have to protect it. You'll be in anxiety all the time because you have to protect what you've swiped or accumulated. You have more than you need and more than therefore than you're entitled to by nature's laws. So you're fighting against the laws of nature. Simple way of life means cooperating with nature's laws, cooperating with Krishna's laws. And over-collecting means you're in conflict with Krishna. You're in conflict with Krishna's laws. Now how are you going to develop your devotion to Krishna while you're busy stealing from him? Or trying to get more from him than you're entitled to? Atyahara, not good. Yes?
And how to find out what is the proper portion for me, for example?
From Shastra, first of all. According to your ashram, you read and you say, okay, I'm a grihastha, I'm entitled to something here, and some portion I'm supposed to give away. I'm sannyasi, I'm not supposed to be holding on to anything. Or I'm brahmachari, I'm not supposed to be holding on to anything. And alright, I'm a grihastha, I can eat a little bit, you know, nice something. But I'm sannyasi, brahmachari, I should be more controlled. Or actually, I'm trying for spiritual life, whatever ashram I'm in, I have to be a little controlled. According to Ayurveda, how much should one eat? Yeah, half what you can take. If you eat half as much as you can take, then another 25% liquid and another 25% air, you'll be healthy. You need the liquid to develop to digest the solid, and you need the air because it's digested by what?
Fire.
What does fire need?
Air.
So if you've got fire and no air, what's going to happen to the fire? Goes out. And then what happens to the 100% that you filled your stomach with? So you'll get sick. You'll feel like sleeping because you'll sleep, you'll get sick, your mind will cloud over, and where will Krishna be? Yes?
Actually, how can we reconcile or understand these two? Well, because one cannot get more than his karma, so how he can over collect?
No, you can get more than your karma. Or, putting it another way, your karma is to over-collect. What you're entitled, your karma is to be a thief. Your karma is to be a, you know. And one has to overcome that. By our conditioning, yes. We're destined to take more, we're destined to get sick, destined to, you know, all of that stuff. We want to change that. We want to transcend what our karma would be by devotional service. Anything else here? Ishavashamidam sarvam and magritakashasvidhanam. Everything belongs to Krishna. Don't take more. Then prayash. Atyahara leads to prayash. How are you going to collect more? By over-endeavor. To get more, you have to work hard. Harder. And in this way, you waste your human form of life, and you go back down. Prayash. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there are two kinds of prayash. Karma prayash and jnana prayash. Over-endeavor for material things and over-endeavor for knowledge. Impersonal liberation, knowledge for the sake of liberation. Karma prayash and jnana prayash.
Sometimes we can see that like devotees also doing volunteering for
That also. We have to see, of course, there's a story that Prabhupada, the devotees in Toronto were looking at a big church building. And they were thinking of buying this building, so they wrote to Prabhupada, this is there, it costs this much, has this much facility. Prabhupada said, why purchase anxiety? Simply for the sake of this building, you know, so much, you'll be overburdened with so much in payments. Why purchase anxiety? Then Prabhupada went to Toronto, and all right, they took him, let's see the building anyway. So he went, saw the building, liked it very much. Prabhupada said, you must get it. But Prabhupada will just be purchasing anxiety. You must be in anxiety. So this is the other way one knows what's atyahara, what's prayash, by the order of the spiritual master. You know, Bombay, everyone was convinced that it was over-endeavor. Only one person wasn't convinced, and that was Prabhupada. So in this way we have to be guided also.
And just one question. Mm-hmm. The devotee in that case, if they never take over the sadhana, what can we say to some devotees?
What can you say? When their endeavors are so heavy that sadhana is out the window. What do you tell them? They don't. They're not listening. What do you tell them?
Yes.
Any suggestions?
First of all, please slow down, and then you are together with a good argument. Mostly, you are overdeveling because you have so many desires.
No, he's desiring to do something for Krishna, right? He's desiring to do some big service or something. Not just that he's desiring to have a bigger house and more land. And okay, what do you tell him? What's that? Yeah, you can talk to his authority and say, we think this guy's in trouble, better help him out. If you're his authority, what do you tell him?
You have to set priorities and policies.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, what you can tell them is that our experience tells us that long term this doesn't work. That you may get some short-term gains, but long-term, this program doesn't work. This is a fall-down program. So if you're not interested in falling down, maybe you want to change your program. Not only our experience tells us, our acharyas tell us, Śrīla Rūpa Goswāmī is telling us here, prayāśa bhakti vinashyati, it destroys devotional service. Do you want to destroy your devotional service? What is over-endeavor? Endeavor that kills your sadhana sounds like over-endeavor, doesn't it? Now sometimes Prabhupada authorized over-endeavor even at the expense of sadhana, but not, you know, on and on and on. Sadhana is required. Any other points on prayash? Good. Prajalpa, big one. Prajalpa results from failure to control which urge? Vacho vegam. The urge to speak. Shrotavyadini Rajendra Nranam Santi Sahasra Saha Apashyatam Atmatattvam Griheshu Grihamedinam. The Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, there's so many limitless subject matters for hearing in the material field. For those who are envious and materially attached. For those apashyatam atmatattvam, who are blind to self-realization. There's so many subjects. This is prajalpa. To talk about ordinary affairs, gossip, gramya katha. Did you hear about such and such? No. Prabhupada said reading heaps of newspapers, magazines, novels, solving crossword puzzles, politics. Okay, we gave politics 3 minutes there, but it was somehow connected. But on and on, you know, you hear about da 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 da. Really? Well, what are the Democrats saying to that? Well, I think they're a bunch of jerks. Prajalpa doesn't go anywhere, no spiritual realization results. Prabhupada mentions also retired men who play cards, fish, watch television, debate useless socio-political schemes. This is all prajalpa. And on the other hand, there's what? Krishna Katha. Satatam Kirtiyanto Mam. Kirtaniya Sadahari. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaite Svite Yata Tata Nam Loi, Kaladesha Niyam Nahi, Sarvasiddhi Loi. One who chants the holy name regardless of time or place, even while sleeping or eating, attains all perfection. Non-stop chanting. Okay. Yes?
I brought up right here, and when we meet with a few friends, we immediately begin unnecessary talking surrounding tech, just like walking fast.
Yeah.
I mean, like when you meet your friends, like first time, you ask them how it's going, and
yeah,
such things. And
those are social rituals. Those are social rituals. So, how's your health? Actually, in the Vedic culture, there are also specific questions according to a person's varna and ashram. So, who was it? Maharaj Dasarath, when Vishishta met Vishishta the sage. So, what is it?
What makes your progress about overcoming cycle of birth and death?
He asked the sage, "How is your, you know, basically, how is your spiritual practice coming?" And he asked the king, "Is everything going well in your kingdom? Are the subjects happy? Are the ministers under control?" You know, these are the sort of questions that might be asked.
In the exchange of devotees, it's also mentioned that it's really important to honestly share your minds. And how can we understand this sharing of minds? It also sounds quite materialistic.
I've forgotten the phrase in Hindi, but it's a very typical question among Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Is your bhajan going on nicely? And how's your spiritual, basically, how's your spiritual life? Rather than, you know, so many mundane questions. So how's it going in Krishna consciousness? Yeah, right to the point. It's up to you. You want to say, wow, I've got real problems, or else, no, fine, how about you? depending on who you're talking to and what level you want to go to and how things actually are going for you. But that's a nice question. Is everything going nicely in your bhajan? Bhajan is all right. So it's natural when people meet, there's some social inquiries. Prabhupada would meet with someone, so how is your family, how is your business? But that's just basically hello. And then from there you go on. Where's the opportunity for some exchange of spiritual talk? Is that all right? Some other question? Yeah? Yeah? Hmm?
If we are founding ourselves in association for the devotees who are beginning with Bhajalpa, how to react, or is it possible to...
What do? If you meet one of these Japa terrorists... Yeah, you can throw a rock and run. What do you do when you meet one of these Prajalpa machines? Or just someone who's a nice devotee but Prajalpa's getting the better of him? What do you do?
I would just say, excuse me, probably now it's time for a change to be
nervous. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Yeah.
Please don't mind.
Please don't mind. Or suppose it's not japa time, what do you do?
Mm-hmm. I would try to the talk, you know, the subject of the talk to somehow or other transfer to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. Take control of the conversation. Why should he be in control of it? Especially when he's introduced some mundane da 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 da. Ask him a question. Read any good books lately? Mm-hmm. In other words, change the subject.
Mm-hmm.
You better watch it, Buster. You're talking Prajalpa. Tell him straight out, huh? Depending on who it is. That's one strategy, yes?
Maharaj, sometimes it happens even to devotees that we have material problems, like psychological or like with our business or whatever. And at the same time, we should only associate with devotees. So we have to look for devotees to speak about material topics as well. So how can we deal with and not coming to Dana Sangha and then going to a professional psychologist, ask him, or go to a professional businessman and ask him for help?
That's included in devotional service. Dadati pratigyanati. Guhyamakyati prishti. To reveal your mind and to hear from others. But it's not that our life should be so much all the material side. But we may ask someone. Any material thing. You know, I'm feeling depressed because of, you know, some family problem. What do you suggest? And especially if you ask someone who's Krishna conscious, then we hope you'll get a good Krishna, you will get a good Krishna conscious answer of some sort. You may get some practical suggestion, you know, there's this government program for whatever it is, or this very good doctor. Or you may get direct spiritual advice that I had this problem and I found that by chanting more carefully or by eating less or whatever it might be. So it's not that anything other than directly speaking from the scriptures is, you know, we can't do it. Prabhu, I've got a real problem. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Matra Sparshas Tukonteya, just tolerate. Yeah, Prabhu, but you know, my wife's about to leave me and my daughter is, you know, gonna die and I don't have money for the doctor. Krishna says, "Du kalyam mashashvatam." Thomas Tatiksha, you know, there's a question of appropriateness. It's not that we just want to become embroiled in trying to solve material problems by material means, but we want to find appropriate responses that are simultaneously Krishna conscious and relevant to the problem at hand. Okay? So it requires some, you know, like someone wrote to Prabhupada, of course, many different things. Prabhupada was giving advice about so many things, not always by quoting Shastra, sometimes by giving marital advice, which he, you know, got sick of giving. Sometimes by giving advice about health. Sometimes by giving advice about taking care of machines. You know, it's not Maya. Like Prabhupada said, if you keep the press clean, it will remain in good condition. So that's not Maya. It's not, you know, it's not a statement from any Purana. But if we want to put print books on the press, it helps for the press to be able to run. So the practical advice about keeping it clean is relevant for Krishna's service.
Mm-hmm. For example, if we help a devotee to get a better health, is it also meant? Is it Vaishnava Seva or is it something else?
No, it's Vaishnava Seva. But again, it requires judgment. On the one side, person has a health problem, you say, well, you know, here's a simple thing you can do, or I think you should see a doctor, or whatever it is. But then there's, you know, when you get together and you say, well, you know, I've got a real problem with my back. Yeah, you got a back problem, I'm having a shoulder problem. Yeah, you know, and I know what you mean, because it's, so that's something like my eye problem. Yeah, I know, I had eye problems too, and I went to this doctor and he was a real jerk, and you know hard to get good health care in this country these days. And, yeah, and you know, I mean, even the Karmis are having these health problems. Did you know that, you know, there's like been a 20% increase in da 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 da, you know, pretty soon you're just talking about the material body with no spiritual reference, no connection to Krishna. Just basically belly aching the same way that karmis might do when they get together. So there's a certain amount of discussion about the world that is sensible for devotees. But we don't want to become so absorbed in material affairs that we forget our real purpose of life. Just as in Bhagavatam, what is that? Dharmasya hyapavargasya narto tayo pakalpate. Nartasya dharmaikantasya kamamapayashri. Life is meant for spiritual realization, and we should just spend as much time on our material needs as required to keep body and soul together. And you know, we have to maintain the body because it's for Krishna's service. We're not preaching to the karmis. Forget your body. Your body doesn't matter. The hell with your body. No, you have to take care of your body. But it's not what your whole life is for. It's not that life is meant for doing something for every little inch of your body to make sure it's comfy and... No. It's just a car to get you there. It's just a vehicle to use for spiritual realization. You don't go anywhere with it, it's useless. So that's the main topic. Where are we going? Imagine you're on a journey and you say, wow, the car's really going nice. So, yeah, are we going in the right direction? It's a fantastic car. I mean, I got such a good deal on this car. Yeah, but where are we going? You know, unless you focus on the point, it could be the greatest car in the world. You may have the greatest mechanic and have gotten the best deal and the best financing and all the latest features, but if you don't know where you're going, so that's the real subject matter for discussion. where are we going? And in relation to that, you know, will the vehicle get us there? Okay? Good, good. Prayasha, Prajalpa, and Niyamagraha. This is one of those nice Sanskrit words that takes advantage of the rules of Sandhi. Everyone know what Sandhi is? Sandhi means joining. It's the rules for joining adjacent sounds. In French you have Sandhi all over the place. Those who know French, you have Sandhi all over the place, right? You take two words and you change how they, you make them fit together. Right? I don't know French, but I know that much French. You put them together and they sound nicer because you cut something off of one word or change something off of one word to make it go nicely. We have that even in English. We, you know, we don't say a article, we say an article because it sounds nicer. We don't say an rat, we say a rat because it sounds nicer. So Sandhi are the rules for putting sounds together. So there are very specific rules. They always work the same way. You memorize them when you're a beginning Sanskrit student. They all go according to Panini's grammar. And one of them is that when you've gone... this and this, it equals this. Short A plus short A equals long A. And another rule is this plus this, or this plus this, also equals that. A short A plus a long A, or a long A plus a short A, equals long A. And two short A's together also equal long A. So that can result in ambiguity. When you get niyama, regulation, ending in a short A, and now it's become a long A, niyamagraha. Did it become a long A because it met another short A, or because it met a long A? You don't know. There's no way to tell. You don't know whether it was a short A, agraha, or a long A, agraha. You can't tell. It's ambiguous. So the Sanskrit writers, including our acharyas, take advantage of this ambiguity to load two meanings into one word. Or to interpret one word two different ways. They'll do that in Bhagavatam, and they have a great time doing it. They love it. They discover all sorts of meaning in Srimad Bhagavatam by taking these rules of Sandhi and saying, well, it could be this word plus this word, or it could be this word plus that word. And if you look at it this way, it means Krishna did this. And if you look at it that way, it means Krishna did that. They take advantage of this ambiguity created by the rules of Sandhi to discover new meanings or convey additional meanings. Okay? So that's what's going on here. We don't know whether it's niyama agraha or niyama agraha. Agraha means not accepting, and agraha means too much accepting the rules and regulations. So Rupa Goswami is taking advantage of this opportunity to condemn both of them in one stroke. We need the rules and regulations, but if we just become rules and regulations men, we're also in trouble. To blindly follow the rules and regulations without understanding the purpose behind them is bad for us. And to neglect the rules and regulations and act whimsically is also bad for us. There's a good example from the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where Govinda was massaging the body of the Lord. Someone know that pastime? You want to tell?
After the big kitten, after the big kitten left, the kitten's last time was so much tired, and in line on the doorway. And then Govinda, normally every time after the kitten, he go and massage Vashita's feet. So that day, because Vashita was lying on the doorway, so, and it's in Vaishnava etiquette that we don't cross over.
Don't cross over someone's body. Yeah.
So Govinda that day, because he was so much attached to his service, he also used cloth to cover Vashita's body to cross over and did the service, performed the service, and he remained there until Vashita woke up. And asked him, "Oh, Govinda, you didn't go for a prasada?" He said, "No, I didn't go for prasada because you're lying on the way." He said, "But how do you get to this place?" He said, "For my service, I can commit offenses, but to gratify my own senses, no."
So he broke the rule. You're not supposed to cross over anyone's body, and especially over the body of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But to serve the Lord, he put his chadar over the Lord's body and stepped over him. But then, to get out the doorway again so that he could go take prasadam, he wouldn't do it. So he respected the rule and regulation as far as it pertained to his own sense gratification, but he broke the rule for the sake of satisfying the Lord. Prabhupada gives the example of his own endeavors where he had to cross the ocean, and he had to do so many things that may not have been in exact accordance with the Vedic way of life. But he did it for the service of the spiritual master and Krishna. If he'd simply gone just, for example, to rule according to, you should chant with Tulsi beads. Prabhupada, there were no Tulsi beads. Prabhupada sent the devotees to the hardware store to buy beads. There's so many rules, but the rules can be adjusted according to the time, place, and the circumstances for promoting Krishna consciousness. But it doesn't mean that that's now like the big loophole, and whenever we want to do something according to our own mental concoction, we say, well, you know, it's time, place, and circumstance. Or the typical version that you hear. If Prabhupada were here now, right, he would reverse himself on every item. If he were here now, he would tell us to do exactly the opposite of what he actually told us to do then. Now, there may be some places where that's legitimate, where you could say, if Prabhupada were here now, X. But on main points of, on major points, that's quite a concession. Even on minor points, it's a concession. You know, what's your evidence that Prabhupada would reverse himself if he were here now? Oh, time, place, and circumstance. Has the circumstance changed? Well, not really. Is the time changed? Well, it's a few years later. Place? Well, okay, it's the same place. It's just like a slogan. Time, place, and circumstance. Time, place, and circumstance. It may be legitimate, but it may just be a trick that you're playing on others or playing on yourself. Watch out for time, place, and circumstance. What's the main rule? What are the main rules? Come on, guys, where were you in the previous course? Yes, those are the main rules. All the other rules are servants of those principles. Yes.
Yeah, today I have a question. We know that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj changed some things about the practice of...
yeah, he changed some things.
Srila Prabhupada also did.
Yes.
So, is it correct to understand that only the great acharyas, they can make such a changes? Or who can make these things?
If you're little, you can make little changes. If you're big, you can make big changes. You know, who drives the car on Tuesday? That's within your jurisdiction to decide. How we conduct the process of initiation, that's a big one. Not that Bhakta George can adjust that. Can there be two different opinions about what constitutes niyamagraha in any given instance? Can there be more than one opinion? Yes.
Yeah, obviously, yes, because the word can be interpreted in two ways, and so you can see from both angles.
Yes, somebody says, oh, that's, you know, you're being a fanatic about the rules and regulations. Somebody else says, you know, right on, you got to follow those rules or you're going to blow it. What do we do about that? In any given instance, how do we decide? You're not sure whether you're being overly stuck to the rules and regulations, or whether, you know, going the other way, you'd be disregarding, you'd be in neglect of the rules and regulations. How do you decide? Ask the spiritual master. Yes.
Judge by the result.
Careful about that, though. Because your judgment may not be reliable. You know, I went from 16 rounds to 4, and I just felt so much better. You know, I realized I'd been whipping myself. You know, just fanatically following 16, 16, 16. You know, there was no devotion. I wasn't chanting sincerely. I was just counting numbers. And now I feel so much, you know, my love for Krishna is coming out. The results are all fantastic. You know.
I was thinking independent judgment, you know, from somebody who is, you know, in the long time.
Well, long, but
which results will...
You're doing it on Tuesday and you may not know the result until a month from now. How do you know whether you should do it or not?
Take ideas from the scriptures.
From the scriptures, yes. From the spiritual master.
And the
sadhus. What the acharyas have done in similar circumstances. What the senior devotees advise us. I saw someplace just the other day, I know where it was. It's in First Canto. We were just reading it. Yes? About Parikshit Maharaj. The monarchs who ruled the earth, although the king had already decided to fast until death, he humbly expressed his decision to elicit the opinions of the great authorities present there. Any decision, however important, should be confirmed by some authority. That makes the matter perfect. This means that the monarchs who ruled the earth in those days were not irresponsible dictators. They scrupulously followed the authoritative decisions of the saints and sages in terms of the Vedic injunction. Maharaj Parikshit, as a perfect king, followed the principles by consulting the authorities, even up to the last days of his life. That's 1:19:12. We just passed it the other day. So this is the method. That I think this or I think that, but let me consult some respected authority. The Shastra, the spiritual master, respected devotees. I think I'm right, but am I right? Even the advanced devotees consult. Anything else about that? And then finally, pray to Krishna, that, you know, because two different authorities told you two different things.
In life, there are some decisions which we have to make on our own. Like, for example, do I marry this wife or that wife, or maybe not marry?
This is all prime territory for consultation. Do I marry? Do I not marry?
But it's also said that the Guru cannot give you instruction about that.
Sure, he can. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Bhatta, do not marry. Just told him straight up, do not marry. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that, you know, this man does not need to get married. Told him flat, do not marry. A spiritual master can certainly say something. Or a spiritual master may say, you should marry. Prabhupada told some disciples, you should get married. Spiritual master definitely. In fact, you shouldn't get married. The brahmacharya can't get married without asking the spiritual master. He can't just decide, well, I'm going to get married. He has to take permission of the spiritual master. Just in India, in family life, you can't marry without asking your parents. America, you can. Hi, Mom, guess what? But in India, you know, you can't do that. You have to consult your father, or the absence of the father, the elder brother, there's got to be some consultation here. You can't just go off and say, well, I'm going to get married to, you know, Benito. Definitely they would consult. Therefore, they would do things right. You know, America, they don't consult, and they blow it. You know, they get married in ridiculous circumstances where they can't afford to get married, for example. Or where they're, you know, they're just coming out of some circumstance where their mind is so in such a tizzy that they shouldn't do anything, make any serious decisions. Or, you know, they marry, and who they're going to marry is determined by lust, or determined by, you know, which way the wind blows at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and, you know, everything's just done on whim, and then naturally it turns out disastrous in so many cases. But in the Vedic civilization, one has to consult. And they would consult, they would consult, and the parents would further consult. They would, not just that you ask your father and your father says yes or no, but he consults the mother, he consults the older brother, he consults the grandfather, he consults, you know, 100 people, he consults the astrologers. You know, if there's anything that's consulted about, my goodness, they consult about marriage like nobody's business. Because it's an important decision. And they want it to be right. So they take their good time about it. They consult. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is the case when you don't have authorities? Because, not like, for example, in East Canal, and Prabhupada and disciples have to decide something what is, like, you know, unclear or.
Still, there's consultation.
Like, for example, can everything be solved by, you know, unity and diversity and what, like that or something?
Well, unity and diversity is a kind of slogan. But our objective is to have unity and diversity, but there are forms of diversity that are unacceptable. There are also forms of unity that are unacceptable. You know, we're just going to be one big happy family and have anything go on here. So it's not, you know, it's an idea with a very definite application. Not just that, again, if Prabhupada were here, unity and diversity, the principles are more important than the details. You know, you can throw out these slogans that stop thought just like that. So yes, principles may be more important than details, but do the details here matter? Oh yes, they matter. Okay, let's look at them. Okay, we want unity and diversity, but does that mean that, you know, this cross-dressing brahmachari really belongs in the brahmachari ashram? Creates diversity. Yes, if Prabhupada were here, he might do it a different way, but would he really? All these things need to be examined. All these things need to be examined. So in ISKCON, we consult. It's not that the Prabhupada disciples all say, well, I'm a Prabhupada disciple, I know what to do. We have to consult among one another. Sometimes we consult some outside authority.
Example.
Well, Prabhupada told us that we could consult Srila Sridhar Maharaj if we had some question. Told us we could consult Srila Narayan Maharaj if we had some question. Sometimes we consult lawyers. We consult accountants. Sometimes we consult our life members who are knowledgeable about a particular subject matter. Prabhupada used to consult his disciples. So, Tamal, what do you think? He consulted me sometimes. He would consult his own disciples. So, what do you think? Now, sometimes it may have just been to get us thinking, but sometimes it seems that he actually wanted to know, you know, what is your opinion and why? Prabhupada sometimes consulted his godbrothers. Consultation. You may need to consult someone about whom to consult. Definitely some people would be better off if they had first consulted someone before they consulted someone. You know, before you went off to Radhakund to consult such and such Babaji, it might have been better if you consulted someone a little closer to home. See if that was a good idea. Yes, something else. Yeah, even Krishna. He's consulting Uddhava. What do you think? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is consulting Sanatana Goswami. Okay? Janasangha. Janasangha means literally associating with people. Jana means people, and Sangha means association. Good idea not to associate with other human beings. Jonathan Swift described them, this is just for your entertainment, as the most pernicious race of odious little vermin nature ever suffered to crawl upon the face of the earth. Isn't that nice?
It's accurate,
isn't it? Yes. Associating with people means what kind of people?
Karmis.
Mayavadis.
Non-Vaishnavas.
Asatsanga. Bad association. Otherwise, good association we want. But sangat sanjayate kama, one's desires develop according to one's association. So we should be careful about whom we associate with. And Prabhupada quotes, asat sanga tyag e vaishnavachar. One householder devotee asked Lord Chaitanya about the behavior of a Vaishnava, and Lord Chaitanya once said, a satsanga tyag, a Vaishnavatra. The behavior of a Vaishnava is that he gives up bad association. What is that bad association? Stri sanga eka shatru. Stri sangi eka shatru. Krishna bhakta. Stri sangi, those who are too much addicted to the association of women. And Krishna abhakta, those who are non-devotees. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I believe, yes, points out that merely talking with people in the course of one's work is not considered association. It's not that if you go to buy a light bulb and the guy at the cash register isn't wearing tilak, you got to walk out of the store. You get on a bus and the driver doesn't have neck beads, you better get off the bus. But he explains, Rupa Goswami will explain in verse 4 that association consists of offering gifts, accepting gifts, offering prasad, accepting prasad, revealing your mind, hearing confidentially. These are the forms of association that bring love, or that represent exchanges of love. These intimate exchanges should be reserved for the devotees. Prabhupada told a story. You know the story about the monkey and the alligator? Yeah?
Tell it for the sake of us.
Tell you. There was a monkey who wanted to cross a river, and the alligator volunteered to take him across. So, alright, the monkey hopped on the alligator's back, and then once the alligator was out in midstream, he said, well, now I'm going to drown you, and along with my family, we're going to have a love feast. We're going to eat your heart out. We're going to eat your heart and enjoy. Monkey said, you should have told me. You know, if only you told me before I got on. Because the thing is that I left my heart at home. But anyway, it's not too late. You take me back to the shore, and I'll go get my heart and come back, and then you can have your feast. So the alligator was a little dull. He he thought that was a good idea. So he brought the monkey back to shore, and the monkey jumped off. Hi, love. So Prabhupada said the moral of the story is that when you go out with the alligators, leave your heart at home.
That's a story.
Let's see. Let's make a list. Let's make a list of asatsanga. Who are some of these asatsanga people? What kind of sangha is asatsanga? Mayavadis. Let's put them at the top of the list. Mayavadis. Who else? Politicians. Mm-hmm. Mundane politicians. Ha hanta hanta visha bhikshana to kisad. Men who are too much attached to women. Womanizers. Who else?
Parents sometimes.
Yeah. Materialistic parents can be bad association. Sorry, Mom, you're bad association. But it may sometimes be true, yeah.
The
Sahajiyas, definitely. Bad association.
People who work to achieve fruitive result.
People who work to achieve fruitive result. Karmis. Fruitive workers. Who else?
Mundane scholars.
Mundane scholars. They can really screw up your Krishna consciousness. They have a gift for it. Vaishnava aparadis. Scientists. Mundane scientists. Spin you around and convince you that it's, you know, it all came from a chunk. Who else? Yes. Was that a hint? Yes.
Christians.
Shall we qualify that in some way? Are we what? Is it Protestants or something that we? Christian fanatics. We can certainly say they're bad association, especially since they waste. They're expert at wasting your time. Or any Christian who wants you to do something other than serve Krishna. And he doesn't have to be a Christian. He can be a Muslim or a Jew or a Zoroastrian or a Zeus worshipper or anything. Yes?
Atheists.
Voidists. They're included in Mayavadis, but we'll give them a special place. Yes?
Drunkards.
Yeah.
It's a drunkard.
Drunkard?
Drunkard.
People who drink too much.
Oh, drunkard.
Drunkards. Drinkards. Yes. Something else.
Devotees who always speak for Java.
Prajalpa speakers. They may not exactly be asat, but then again they may. Their sangha gives you asat kata, and we may not consider them the best association. Yes?
Sometimes in this code it appears that Gaudiya Math also is important.
Sometimes it appears that Gaudiya Math. Well, let's look a little more carefully before we say that they're a satsanga. Because there may be persons who are sadhus that we may choose for some other reason not to associate with. There may be persons, just like Srila Prabhupada told us at one point, I'll find the quote exactly. Yeah, no, let me just not finding. Let's see if I find what I'm looking for. Anyway, there was one devotee who was the brother of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. and he was still living in Srila Prabhupada's, I'm sorry, brother of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he was living still in Prabhupada's time with us. And Prabhupada met him and was very happy to meet him. There's a photograph, in fact, where you can see them together in a very happy mood. But Prabhupada later wrote to one devotee that we should not associate with him. Prabhupada said, even he is a pure devotee, or something to that effect, we should not associate with him. Because Prabhupada detected some criticism by him of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Prabhupada said, even, you know, whatever his spiritual qualification, we shall not associate with him. Doesn't mean he's not Krishna conscious, but it means his association will not be good for us. Because he had some negative things, opinion, in that regard. So sometimes, even though we may respect a person as a sadhu, we may not associate with that particular sadhu due to some particular reason.
I must say, a person's envious of a child?
Yeah. Now, of course, you say he's envious, then how is he a sadhu? But we may say, well, from our position, we have to respect him. He's engaged in the service of Krishna. He's a sadhu. But there's something here which means that I should not associate with him. There may be some disagreement. Just like Prabhupada, many times he told us that we should avoid, strictly told us, avoid his godbrothers. Now, you know, sometimes he said strong things about some of his godbrothers. But we were not supposed to say strong things about his godbrothers. We should respect them all as sadhus. All of the disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we should respect them as sadhus. But given the directions of our founder Acharya, we may sometimes be a little careful about how we associate with such sadhus. Of course, now there are hardly any left. In Prabhupada's time, there were more. In our time with Prabhupada, there were more. But Prabhupada was very particular about guiding us when to associate with which of them, under what circumstances. It was all quite particular. He was not, you know, open book. He didn't tell us, you know, they're all non-devotees, or of course sometimes he said very strong things about them. But that's an example of how someone might be considered a sadhu, but we might not associate with them. Even Mayavadis, from one point of view, they're sadhus. But because they're against devotional service, we don't associate with them. So sometimes we may find that there are some persons who are definitely sadhus, but they may not appreciate something that we value, and to avoid misunderstanding, we may simply not associate with them. But that doesn't mean that we think that they're not sadhus. We should, again, we want to be very careful about Vaishnava Parad. It's not that if you're not in ISKCON, you can't be a sadhu. We should be very careful. Or if you're a Goswami by family, you can't be a sadhu. Unless you were initiated, then you must be an asadhu. No, you didn't come in our sampradaya. We should respect that, no, they must be sadhus, or we respect them as sadhus. They're living in Vrindavan, all the Brajvasis from one point of view. They must all be sadhus. But it doesn't mean that we hang out on the street corner with the rickshaw wallahs, smoking bidis with them, as Vaishnav Sangha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told, who was it? Jagadananda Pandit. Jagadananda Pandit, I want to go to Vrindavan, I want to go to Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. Alright, go to Vrindavan, and when you get there, go straight to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Don't turn right, don't turn left, and don't associate with the Vrajvasis. Why? They're all Raganuga Bhaktas. You're not going to understand what these people are doing. They're in another level. You know, they may not sometimes follow all the regular principles strictly. They may lie down in the temple. We read in Nectar of Devotion, sometimes a devotee in filial affection lies down in the temple. But don't associate with the Vrajvasis. Just put yourself, find Rupa and Sanatana as fast as you can, place yourself in their association, stay there some time, and then come right back. Don't go floating around Vrindavan associating with all the Vrajvasis, because you're going to get confused. He didn't say because they're not sadhus, they're not devotees, but they're not the devotees you should associate with. We have to be guided by our acharyas. What is the right association? Even if it's sadhusan, we may sometimes forfeit sadhu sangha by the direction of higher authority. Now that doesn't mean that our authority should now cut us off from all sadhu sangha, just associate with me. You know, don't go to any other GBC zone, don't go anyplace else, because there, you know, that's not very good. I'm the only one who's a sadhu, the rest are all rascals. What kind of sadhus do they think they are? So, again, we should see everything carefully. Yes?
This is a sensitive one. Devotees who criticize our spiritual master
should avoid.
Does that?
We should avoid. If our spiritual master is being criticized, then it's mentioned in Nectar of Devotion that we, what are you supposed to do under such circumstances?
Cut his tongue off. You're supposed to defeat him with words.
Yes.
Yeah.
First thing is you defeat him with words. Second thing is you go away. No, second thing is you give up your life. And if you can't do either of those two, you go away. Wasn't that what we read in Nectar of Devotion? There are other places where it talks about a little tongue cutting. That's also there. But I think we read in Nectar of Devotion the last week that first thing is defeat him. Second thing is give up your life. If you can't defeat him, I'll give up my life. And if you can't do either of those, then just go away. And if you're going to put yourself in this place where you're going to be hearing that kind of, well, better not to do that. Better not go there. So we may respect such persons at a distance. It's mentioned by Baladeva Vishwanath that if a Vaishnav, there's a person who's a Vaishnav but his behavior is not very good, we should respect him from a distance. We should respect him from a distance. So just like there's someone who's a Prajalpa expert. So we may not say that he's a non-devotee or, all right, he's a devotee. But I may respect him from a distance, because I'd rather not get into Prajalpa. Not that, you know, everyone immediately ends up on the non-devotee list, but even those who are devotees or sadhus, we may sometimes be reluctant to associate with because of some bad habits, because we know that this person has criticized our Guru Maharaj, or for whatever reason. We may sometimes respect them, but be reluctant to associate with them intimately. Not to offend them. Not to, you know, commit offenses to them, but we may sometimes be cautious about their association. Yes? Same thing, yogis, you can put them there too. Yogis, gyanis, karmis, how about television and radio? It depends. You might find the 2% that has some value.
Can you put some problem
taking? Excuse me?
Can you put problem taking?
Yeah, I mean, that's there. But can television and radio be bad association?
Yes.
Concentrated bad association. High tech bad association. The kind of bad association that someone has spent millions of dollars on to figure out how to get it to grab hold of your mind. This is, television and radio is not amateur work. It's done by highly paid professional people, including people with advanced degrees in psychology, advanced skills in capturing attention, capturing and holding attention. In other words, people who are expert at screwing up your mind and who are being paid good money to do it. So you might want to think twice before you enter their hallowed domain of association. Okay, we're over time. Let's see if there's anything I wanted to say about Lolium. Greed. I have some nice things to say about it, but because we're out of time, I'm not going to say them. The essence of it is that we should be greedy for hearing Krishna Katha, associating with devotees, and serving Krishna. That kind of greed is very good. Yes?
In the morning lecture, we also heard that we have to have greed for giving up sense gratification.
Yeah, that's kind of reverse greed. Renunciation is reverse greed. But this is okay, I'll give you. Yara punya punna pale, se mukha darshan mile, dul anki ki koride pane. Dvi guna vare Krishna log, pite nare manakshog, duke kare vidhir nindane. If by devotional service one gets the results of pious activities and sees Lord Krishna's face, what can he relish with only two eyes? His greed and thirst increase twofold by seeing the nectarian face of Krishna. Due to inability to sufficiently drink that nectar, he becomes very unhappy and criticizes the Creator for not having given more than two eyes. That's greed. So that kind of greed you can keep. All right, we're out of time. Thank you all very much. See you tomorrow.